Chapter 31. Nick Andros lay sleeping, but not quiet, on the bunk in Sheriff Baker's office. He was naked except for his shorts, and his body was lightly oiled with sweat. His last thought before sleep had taken him the night before was that he would be dead by morning. The dark man that had constantly haunted his feverish dreams would somehow break through that last thin barrier of sleep and take him away. Coming back from burying Jane Baker, he had swerved to avoid the corpse of a dog lying in the road and had fallen off the bike he was riding. He had gone sprawling, striking his head on the pavement and blacking out. He had come to a long time later, maybe as much as 3 hours by the way the sun had westered, and his vision had been doubled. He had been terrified that he had given himself a serious concussion, perhaps even a fracture. It would have been terribly ironic to have survived the beating administered by Ray Booth and his friends, then the superflu, only to die as a result of falling off a kid's bike. But by dark his vision had begun to come together again, and by yesterday morning it had been fine. It was the slight and unimportant ladder of scratches on his leg that was going to kill him. He had gone without disinfecting it, and by noon 2 days ago the skin around the scrape had gotten red, and all the muscles of his leg seemed to ache. He had limped down to Dr. Soames's office, and had gone through his drug closet that night, looking for penicillin or ampicillin. By then he had been feverish and badly frightened. He was well aware that he would die if his body reacted strongly against the penicillin, but he thought the alternative might be an even nastier death. The infection was racing, racing. He found Soames's penicillin samples and swallowed two of the pills. It did not kill him, but there was no noticeable improvement either. His sleep these last 2 nights had not seemed like sleep at all. His dreams were a flood. It seemed that everyone he had ever known was coming back for a curtain call. Rudy Sparkman, pointing at the white sheet of paper. You are this blank page. His mother, tapping lines and circles she had helped him make on another white page, marring its purity. It says Nick Andros, honey, that's you. Jane Baker, her face turned aside on the pillow, saying, Johnny, my poor Johnny. Unlike all the other dreams he had had in his life, Nick did not have to lip-read these. He could actually hear what people were saying. The dreams were incredibly vivid. Then they would fade as the pain in his leg brought him close to waking. Then a new scene would appear as he sank down into sleep again. There were people he had never seen in 2 of the dreams, and these were the dreams he remembered the most clearly when he woke up. He was on a high place. The land was spread out below him like a relief map. It was desert land, and the stars above had the mad clarity of altitude. There was a man beside him. No, not a man, but the shape of a man, as if the figure had been cut from the fabric of reality, and what really stood beside him was a negative man, a black hole in the shape of a man. And the voice of this shape whispered, Everything you see will be yours, if you fall down on your knees and worship me. Nick shook his head, wanting to step away from that awful drop, afraid the shape would stretch out its black arms and push him over the edge. Why don't you speak? Why do you just shake your head? In the dream, Nick made the gesture he had made so many times in the waking world, a laying of his finger over his lips, then the flat of his hand against his throat, and then he heard himself say in a perfectly clear, rather beautiful voice, I can't talk. I am mute. But you can. If you want to, you can. Nick reached out to touch the shape then, his fear momentarily swept away in a flood of amazement and burning joy. But as his hand neared that figure's shoulder, it turned ice cold, so cold it seemed that he had burned it. He jerked it away with ice crystals forming on the knuckles, and it came to him. He could hear the dark shape's voice, the far-off cry of a hunting nightbird, the endless whine of the wind. He was struck mute all over again by the wonder of it. There was a dimension to the world he had never missed because he had never experienced it, and now it had fallen into place. He was hearing sounds. He seemed to know what each was without being told. They were pretty. Pretty sounds. He ran his fingers back and forth across his shirt and marveled at the swift whisper of his nails on the cotton. Then the dark man was turning toward him, and Nick was terribly afraid. This creature, whatever it was, performed no free miracles. if you fall down on your knees and worship me." And Nick put his hands over his face because he wanted all the things the black man shape had shown him from this high desert place: cities, women, treasure, power. But most of all, he wanted to hear the entrancing sound his fingers made on his shirt, the tick of a clock in an empty house after midnight, and the secret sound of rain. But the word he said was no, and then that freezing cold was on him again, and he had been pushed. He was falling, end over end, screaming soundlessly as he tumbled through these cloudy depths, tumbled into the smell of corn? Yes, corn. That was the other dream. They blended together like this, with hardly a seam to show the difference. He was in the corn, the green corn, and the smell was summer earth and cow manure and growing things. He got to his feet and began to walk up the row he had found himself in, stopping momentarily as he realized he could hear the soft wicker of the wind flowing between the July corn's green, sword-like blades. And something else. Music. Some sort of music. And in the dream, he thought, so that's what they mean. It was coming from straight ahead, and he walked toward it, wanting to see if this particular succession of pretty sounds came from what was called piano, or horn, or cello, or what. The hot smell of summer in his nostrils, the overarching blue sky above, that lovely sound. In this dream, Nick had never been happier, and as he neared the source, a voice joined the music, an old voice like dark leather, slurring the words a little as if the song was a stew, often reheated, that never lost its old savor. Mesmerized, Nick walked toward it. "I come to the garden alone, while the dew is still on the roses. The voice I hear, falling on my ear, the Son of God discloses. And he walks with me and he talks with me, tells me I am his own. And the joy we share as we tarry there, none other has ever known." As the verse ended, Nick pushed through to the head of the row, and there in the clearing was a shack, not much more than a shanty, with a rusty trash barrel to the left and an old tire swing to the right. It hung from an apple tree that was gnarled but still green with lovely life. A porch slanted out from the house, a splintery old thing held up with old oil-clotted jack-lifters. The windows were open, and the kind summer breeze blew ragged white curtains in and out of them. From the roof, a peaked chimney of galvanized tin, dented and smoky, jutted at its own old, odd angle. This house sat in its clearing, and the corn stretched away in all four directions as far as the eye could see. It was broken only on the north by a dirt road that dwindled away to a point on the flat horizon. It was always then that Nick knew where he was. Polk County, Nebraska, west of Omaha and a little north of Osceola. Far up that dirt road was U.S. 30 and Columbus sitting on the north bank of the Platte. Sitting on the porch was the oldest woman in America, a black woman with fluffy white thin hair. She is thin herself, wearing a house dress and specs. She looks thin enough for a high afternoon wind to just blow her away, tumble her into the high blue sky, and carry her perhaps all the way to Julesburg, Colorado. And the instrument she is playing, perhaps that's what's holding her down, keeping her on the earth, is a guitar. It sounds nice. He feels he could just stand where he is for the rest of the day, watching the old black woman sitting on her porch held up by jack-lifters in the middle of all this Nebraska corn. Stand here west of Omaha and a little north of Osceola in the county of Polk, listening. Her face is seamed with a million wrinkles, like the map of a state where the geography hasn't settled down. Rivers and canyons along her brown leather cheeks, ridges below the knob of her chin, the sinuous raised drumlin of bone at the base of her forehead, the caves of her eyes. She has begun to sing again, accompanying herself on the old guitar. "Jesus, won't you come by here? Oh, Jesus, won't you come by here? Jesus, won't you come by here? 'Cause now is the needy time. Oh, now is the needy time. Now is the..." "Say, boy, who nailed you to that spot?" She puts the guitar across her lap like a baby and gestures him forward. Nick comes. He says he just wanted to listen to her sing. The singing was beautiful. Well, singing's God's foolishness. I do it most of the day now. How are you making out with that black man? He scares me. I'm afraid. Boy, you got to be afraid. Even a tree at dusk, if you see it in the right way, you got to be afraid. We're all mortal, praise God. But how do I tell him no? How do you breathe? How do you dream? No one knows. But you come see me, anytime. Mother Abigail is what they call me. I'm the oldest woman in these parts, I guess, and I still make my own biscuit. You come see me anytime, boy, and bring your friends. But how do I get out of this? God bless you, boy. No one ever does. You just look up to the best and come see Mother Abigail any time you take a mind to. I'll be right here, I guess. Don't move around much anymore. So you come see me. I'll be right here, right here. He came awake bit by bit until Nebraska was gone, and the smell of the corn, and Mother Abigail's seamed dark face. The real world filtered in, not so much replacing that dream world as overlaying it until it was out of sight. He was in Shoyo, Arkansas. His name was Nick Andros. He had never spoken nor heard the sound of a guitar, but he was still alive. He sat up on the cot, swung his legs over, and looked at the scrape. The swelling had gone down some. The ache was only a throb. I'm healing, he thought with great relief. I think I'm going to be okay. He got up from the cot and limped over to the window in his shorts. The leg was stiff, but it was the kind of stiffness you know will work out with a little exercise. He looked out at the silent town, not Shoyo anymore, but the corpse of Shoyo, and knew he would have to leave today. He wouldn't be able to get far, but he would make a start. Where to go? Well, he supposed he knew that. Dreams were just dreams. But for a start, he supposed he could go northwest, toward Nebraska. Nick pedaled out of town at about 1:15 in the afternoon of July 3rd. He packed a knapsack in the morning, putting in some more of the penicillin pills in case he needed them, and some canned goods. He went heavy on the Campbell's tomato soup and the Chef Boyardee ravioli, two of his favorites. He put in several boxes of bullets for the pistol and took a canteen. He walked up the street, looking in garages until he found what he wanted, a 10-speed bike that was just about right for his height. He pedaled carefully down Main Street, in a low gear, his hurt leg slowly warming to the work. He was moving west, and his shadow followed him, riding its own black bike. He went past the gracious, cool-looking houses on the outskirts of town, standing in the shade with their curtains drawn for all time. On the outskirts of town, he saw a pair of taillights sticking up out of the ditch, and dismounted the bike to take a look. It was Dr. Soames's car. Soames was lying over the steering wheel with his eyes closed. On the floor beside him was his black bag, overturned, its bottles and vials spilling out. Nick looked for a long time, and then rode on. He camped that night in a farmhouse 10 miles west of Shoyo. By nightfall on July 4th, he was nearly to Oklahoma. That evening, before he went to sleep, he stood in another farmyard, his face turned up to the sky, watching a meteor shower scratch the night with cold white fire. He thought he had never seen anything so beautiful. Whatever lay ahead, he was glad to be alive.